America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to a post-World War III edition of Let's Weekend.
We survived, I think.
Yeah, it happened. It did like 5 minutes.
Yep. So, yeah, does that make us all war veterans?
Yeah, we're kind of the new greatest generation all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Next, you know, I can't wait to, you know, sit outside on a lawn chair and in my front yard and yelling at those damn kids.
Except you do that on Twitch now.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was your age, I was sitting on my couch fighting for your freedoms. Alright. Well, but yeah, so I of course am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me tonight is Filippo Nolfo and Chris Sologi. Kind of a light crowd tonight, partly because, well, for one thing, Pat's got I think he's fixing to have a moving situation, isn't he?
Yeah, he's working on that. Not exactly sure what's keeping him from the podcast tonight, but yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, and Teresa has got family shit to take care of, so.
Yeah.
It'll just be the three of us.
Yeah, and I think everybody else is probably stoned.
Yeah, everybody else is probably stoned off their asses because, yes, it is 4/20, April 20th, 2018. Mm-hmm. At this point, it might as well be a national holiday because, fuck it, everybody in this country is already toking. So, yeah. I know for sure I had a bit of toke this early today, so.
Yeah. Why the fuck not?
Yep. I had to get it off my mom, of course, but.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, this week, well, like we said, World War III actually didn't happen. Apparently the whole thing was kind of war theater that was made to look like NATO was actually doing something. There weren't any real casualties, just a couple of folks got injured.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, mission accomplished. Which is literally what Trump tweeted as soon as it was over.
And then he bragged that it was such a great thing that he was just going to keep saying it more and more.
Because
That worked real well the last time it was used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It totally didn't become a running joke.
Yeah.
So, amongst other things, we'll be talking about, we got some more work from the ongoing activities from Stupid Watergate.
Yeah.
Which is, God damn, that we got a couple of twists in there that none of us saw coming. We'll tell you what those are.
Perfect sense in the world.
Yeah, it's like, oh God, how did we not see this before? You'll know what we're talking about when we get to it. Also, most of the Western world are basically telling you, yo, people, Russia's hacking your shit. Might want to get on that. A certain someone has joined Donald Trump's legal team. Honestly, I can't believe we didn't see this one coming either. Also, Amazon and Best Buy, they got a partnership going. NASA is launching a new satellite. Huey Lewis in the news. We're going to be talking about them. Also, some Netflix shit coming up soon. We got a stacked card this week, so we're going to go ahead and get right into it. So first things first, to start us off as we always do, Phil, what have you been up to this week?
So I've kind of decided I'm going to start watching a bit more movies and TV shows and stuff like that, and getting caught up on things that I've missed. And I started this week by finally watching The Departed. Holy shit, that movie is good.
Yeah, it is.
It's, yeah.
Sorry, I just went through puberty again.
That's good.
But yes, it is indeed a good film.
Yeah, it's a great film. It's got a great cast. Matt Damon is in there. Leonardo DiCaprio, Jack Nicholson, among others. Listening to Leonardo DiCaprio attempting to do Boston accent is, it's not so great.
Yeah.
But, if you know, for the most part, the film comes off really good. And, yeah, well, the movie is, like, you know, 12 years old now, so I guess, yeah, it's not a spoiler to say the name of the name of the movie is The Departed because everybody fucking dies in it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, watch it. It's, I think, probably one of the best crime drama flicks I've seen in a long, long time, and I'm kind of surprised it took me this long to get to it. So, did that. What else have I been doing? Well, with that, I also went a little bit old school and watched Scarface, because why the fuck not?
It's always a good time to watch Scarface.
Yeah.
It's that kind of movie.
Yeah, you just pop the popcorn, don't take it too seriously, and yeah, it's really good.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Have you heard that there's actually like an NC-17 cut out there somewhere?
I've heard that, but I've never been able to find
So people don't know this, but yeah, so this is a lot of people don't actually know this. Supposedly there's an NC-17 cut of Scarface that's out there somewhere. And the reason it exists is because originally, you know, they wanted to get it so it'd be an R rating, right?
Right.
But the thing is, anybody who's ever seen Scarface will tell you it is an orgy of drugs, bullets, bloodshed, and just cocaine galore.
Yeah.
You know, just by itself.
Yeah.
The original cut was even worse. And they had to, like, seriously cut it down. And even when they cut it down to, like, the R rating that we know now, they still had trouble getting it down to an R rating, so they actually had to contact folks from the Miami Police Department, yeah. Specifically the part that works in the... that works in the drug trafficking part.
Yeah.
To tell them that, guys, they ain't making this shit up. Like the infamous chainsaw scene was like the big stickling point. Like, no, that shit actually happens.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's a.
Yeah, it's a great, great, great movie.
It may be one of the most. It is the most 80s movie. Just. Ever made.
Yeah. Not entirely sure why you would cast Al Pacino to play a Cuban, but okay, it worked.
It fucking worked, yeah.
So, there you go. Other than that, well, I'll be watching Mythbusters, just going through that run of shows again. It's always fun. They finally got that jet car to take off, so that was fun. Sort of. Yeah, it did take off. Then it, you know, went over head over heels over and over again, and then crashed and broke up into a billion pieces. But mission accomplished.
Yep.
It actually hit the ramp this time instead of exploding on the right before the start. So that was great. Than that, not much. Just been playing some Titan Quest, some Mega Man 2, because well, it's Mega Man 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Superior to its predecessor.
Yeah.
In just about every way possible.
Yeah.
And the first Mega Man wasn't that bad.
Yeah, first Mega Man wasn't that bad, and then you play the second one, and it's like, wow, that is a big improvement. Mm-hmm. They got rid of score for, well, every other game in the series, basically, because it was kind of pointless. But, yeah, it's great. Great fucking game, and yeah, I have both of the legacy collections, so I'm going to work my way through those. Having save states is a really nice thing. So, yeah. Yeah, so that's pretty much what I've been doing. How about you, Chris?
I've been watching more of The Drew Carey Show. I'm on season 7, the first 2 episodes of which are they call it like a back to school rock and roll. sort of sketch show thing, which just features a lot of like doing, you know, like 40s, 50s, 60s style, like health, sort of dramatization sort of things. But there's also a lot of musical acts in it, and it's like, oh, this is pure late 90s, early 2000s.
Fuck yes, it is.
So if I can remember them all, there's Shadaisy, Smash Mouth.
Of Uncle course. Cracker. Oh, God, yes.
There is... what's it? Crap. There's Peter Frampton, of course. The old guy who hung around in the 90s to make everybody else think he's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Who Who else was in here? There was a... Was it Sugar Ray?
Probably. Sugar Ray was fucking
every morning.
Everywhere.
Yeah, that's Sugar
Yeah,
Ray.
That's him. They did the other song that they had. yeah, and there was one more, I think. I can't even remember. It's so, like, I don't remember who this person, these people are. But yeah, it's like, holy crap, this was a good screenshot of what music was like at that time.
Yeah, it's pretty shitty, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of sucked.
Yeah. And it culminated in, like, one of the... So this whole period of the Drew Carey Show, let's see, in, like, one episode, Nikki gets divorced from her husband, as you'd seen previously in the previous season, her getting married. And Drew proposes to her right away, and they get married. Then same day, Kate decides to jump on that bandwagon, and Drew gets married to her. So he's trying to juggle two wives, and surprisingly, it blows up in his face.
I wonder why.
Hey, really? What a shock.
And a whole other part of this whole storyline is that Steve and Mimi are kind of broken up a little bit because Steve is not happy with how she treats Drew. Wants her to, you know, formally drop all that and make good with him, and which culminates in a nice bit where she gets Motorhead to set up shop outside his house and play a song that's basically saying, you know, I'm so sorry, I did a bad thing sort of thing, but just cranking up the bass so his house is just literally shaking as he's trying to go down and figure out what the hell's going on.
I personally see nothing wrong with this.
Yeah.
Nope.
You know, complete with Lemmy.
I'm okay with this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then basically he ends the whole thing by saying, "That's all you had to do." So yeah, that was pretty nice.
And, yeah. So the other what you were talking about earlier, the rock and roll special hour. Yeah. Other act you did. Mention was you mentioned Shadazy, didn't you?
Yeah.
All right. There was only like that's you pretty much named all five of them.
Okay.
Yeah. It was let's see. It was Sugar Ray, Shadazy, Smash Mouth, Uncle Cracker, and yes, Peter Frampton.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, which was weird.
And
to
Amanda
see him.
Bynes was in there too, apparently.
Yeah, Jenny McCarthy and Amanda Bynes were sort of special guests. Amanda Bynes, you would have been forgiven for not knowing she was even there, because they didn't do anything with her.
Uh-huh.
Jenny McCarthy was a much bigger part, because they have her and Kate make out in one scene.
Yep.
Complete with, like, the camera spinning around to show all the guys, like, just staring and drooling and all that. And then there's another bit where Jenny McCarthy... they show Drew, Oswald, and Lewis as teenagers, and Jenny McCarthy plays his mom, and they give her an icicle pop, I guess, and, you know, she makes references to being a penis, and they have the crotches on Lewis and Oswald's pants just explode. Then I think after they leave... she goes to the door because pizza's arrived, and then Drew's crotch explodes.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Classy stuff.
Yeah.
But other than that, I watched the first episode of Lost in Space on Netflix, the new series. And that went a lot longer than I was expecting. It is about like an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of almost like a mini movie. Where basically they crash land onto a planet. Bad shit happens. They're stranded. More bad stuff happens, and they finally get to a decent place.
Hmm.
Yep.
And then they show like a flashback. They show flashbacks throughout to show how the family gets there, and sort of the initial whole program to send out these families and such. As the whole premise, I guess, is they discover that there's going to be a like asteroid or something that's going to hit the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So they send out humans to go find Goldilocks planets. To find a new place for humanity to go to. And I guess like the ultimate thing you find out is like, shit went real wrong.
Yeah, basically.
I don't know how the hell you know anybody even got out of it, but hey. But I guess that's the whole Lost in Space thing is like, yeah. They get stranded and never really make any progress, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do some neat stuff there. I look forward to watching more of that. As for games, I got the new God of War.
Uh-huh.
I got enough time to get that installed and play about like 20, 30 minutes of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so far it's really cool. Probably just play more of it and talk more about it on Sunday. But so far, there's some neat stuff about it. The whole presentation of the game is done as a single shot.
Yeah.
They don't cut away once, which involves some really cool ways of using the camera. So there's some bits where, like one of the first things you do with Kratos and his son is cut down a tree for some firewood. And as you bring it back to their where they live, the Kratos is just chopping up the tree, and the camera just goes over to his son to show what he's doing while Kratos does his thing. And that's how they sort of get away with having other people do things off screen, which is pretty well done. There are definitely like shows and movies that try to do the whole single shot thing. That at least makes more sense from a technology standpoint, because it's just you have people practice their stuff a lot because you can't restart things.
Yeah.
With that, but in a game, it's kind of crazy because you basically can't do any of the normal types of tricks to, you know, hide loads and all that sort of stuff. In which I had heard that they actually consulted with Area 5, the guys who originally made the 1UP show.
Yeah.
Now do a lot of work for hire, and they did their own like game documentary series that was really good. And so they consulted with them about how to do some of this stuff and learn some of their techniques, which seems to have turned out pretty well.
Yeah.
And the settings, actually, they have a lot of good like accessibility stuff, different styles. Mm-hmm. The HUD, you can just have like an immersive thing which turns off everything, as well as some customization just to make it work how you want.
Yeah.
All that. I've earned XP. I've picked up, I think it's called Hex Silver. It's like their currency.
Yeah.
And I've killed some dudes. I've thrown the axe and I've recalled it, which is a pretty neat mechanic. Yeah, it's pretty neat. I'm looking forward to playing some more of that. And yeah, I've definitely tried to stay away from any coverage. Because when the review started going out like a week or so ago, everybody fucking wanted to talk about it. I was like, no, I don't want to hear anything about it.
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up. Which ended up with me like skipping large chunks of podcasts. I was just like, yeah, no, let's just keep going. Yeah, seems like it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. Now, I'll say one thing for the immersive thing. Just basically save that for your second playthrough.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm definitely not interested in that, at least right now. But yeah, I've been playing more Fortnite. I think I'm up to 750 of the currency, the paid currency stuff, so I'm almost there to making all my money back that I put into that. They put back the 50 versus 50 mode and with some big changes to it that makes it actually a really fun mode now. So basically, when they, you know, just randomly decide where the two teams are going to be having their party buses go, They split the map in half, at least just on the map itself, not like physically. And they pick a point on there to show the final circle. And you've got, wherever you land, you've got 10 minutes to get to that final circle and take out the rest of the other team. So it kind of gives you a good bit of time to just go out and get all the loot you can, try and get the best weapons, get as much material and all that to build up your defenses and all that. And it's really neat. I've definitely fucked around too long in the looting phase and died outside of the circle. But I've also gotten to the being, I think it was 4-3 in favor of my side. And we managed to win, which was really nice. Because at the final circle, it's just people building a lot of shit all over the place. Both as defenses as well as trying to trick the other team into not being able to tell where they're at, all that sort of stuff. And so it's really brings all that stuff into play in a really nice way. Because it just lets people just build shit in a way that's more useful than the way it is in sort of the normal modes, where it's usually just people build the sort of stairs to try to get an advantage on people. And Heroes kind of like, here's their fortifications that are on this side of this final circle area, and we're on our side doing our stuff and all that, and you're trying to, you know, get your shots in and all that, and it's really well done. I hope that actually sticks, because that would be pretty cool. And it's also actually good for some of the challenge stuff they've have for the people that bought the battle pass, because that stuff all counts. I don't think any of your stats counts towards your actual regular stuff. But if you know, I have thing challenges for like, oh, loot 7 chests in this specific named area. And it's like, I can go fuck off and do that while I'm looting up and that sort of stuff. And so it works really well. But yeah, that game's really a lot of fun. That only makes sense why that game is huge as it is. Because it's a lot more open to people of varying skill levels, where PUBG is kind of like the really complicated control-wise and all that.
Yeah.
And I also figured out why I couldn't log into the Xbox One version, despite them being open up, because if you've played it on PS4, you're locked out of Xbox One and vice versa. Despite it supposed to be cross-play with the PC version, it's like there should... It should just be able to create like a separate set of data for the Xbox One version. So that you can have your own progression that way, but still be able to log in with the account. Because it's like, I have accounts for like Warframe, high res stuff, Smite and Paladins. Like that stuff lets me, you know, attach both counts to it. And they don't fall apart if I try to play on one or the other. It's like, yeah, this account stuff sucks for Fortnite.
Yeah, you'd think Epic would have that together.
No, their help section just says, hey, you should make a second account. It's like, no.
I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I shouldn't have to have two accounts to play a game on two platforms.
Yeah.
I don't have to do that with like EA stuff, Ubisoft, WB. I don't have to do that. I shouldn't have to do it for Epic.
Rocket League.
Yeah. Rocket League works perfectly fine.
Yep.
Though you're not really logging into an account there. They really should have like an overarching account system that attaches all that stuff and keeps all the unlocks and such separate, but just lets you be able to track all that. So I think that would be nice to have sort of an ultimate, like, here's how much you've actually played.
Yeah.
That's spread across 4 or 5 different platforms.
Yeah.
You can sort of do that with the reward system, which is rewards.rocketleague.com, which if you watch any of the official Twitch stuff they do for their Rocket League Championship Series, if you just watch, they just randomly give out special items for people that watch it. And so you can only pick one platform at a time to receive that stuff. And they just put up a new badge for this season. So I've been unlocking that from my main PS4 account. But yeah, you can attach all that. I think they just added switches, a way to unlock stuff for there as well. So yeah, it all works pretty well. It's like, I would really like to have that back-end system. Especially make it nice if you find assholes, and like, you should be able to have like an ignore list that just blocks them from being able to be matchmade into games with you.
Yeah.
And that would be nice, especially cross-platform. If you could attach like, oh, that's that asshole. He goes by this name on Switch or this name on Xbox, you know.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff would work really well to get some of the assholes out of your way in the matchmaking stuff. But, yeah, cool. I've also been playing more Burnout Paradise. Kind of still just fucking around, looking for a lot of the collectible stuff. But also been doing some races, and, yeah, some of that's pretty good. The Marked Man stuff is real hard.
Yeah.
I failed my first one because I kept... It wasn't so much they were fucking me up, it was just I kept fucking up. And fucking up trying to figure out the way to go around on the map. Because I was trying to basically just trick them into taking the wrong way on forks. Forked paths. And that would work for a little bit, and then I realized that forked path that I took was not going directly to where I needed to go. But I had to get off at a specific point. This is on the, like on the bridge area that leads into the train tracks and all that. There's like one little point that you can get off and then get to this exit on this race. And I kept fucking it up. but yeah, that's still a lot of fun. I look forward to putting some more time into that. Kind of considering getting the PS4 version because that's on sale now. It's $30, I think, for this week on. They're in their double discount sale. It's like, oh, I should probably get that.
Then you have to start all over again.
Yeah, that's the good part. There's more to do. I think I'm on the B license on Xbox. So I still have A and then the Ultimate Burnout license. Which that last one requires you to do every race on the map. Which I'm fine with doing. It's just...
It's a lot.
Yeah. It's like, I want to do all this other shit, too. Which, that's totally fine. I could probably throw in just some online shit to mix it up. But also, I have plenty more to play, so I don't necessarily have to, you know, grind right through it.
Yeah.
That's the nice thing about having a bunch of stuff to play. I don't have the one thing that I have to grind through, and then I just want to kill myself at the end. Like, some people try to, and it's like, no, you should have a couple things on the burners.
Yeah.
Just switch between them. Because it keeps things fresh, not dragging you down.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's been it. How about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, first and foremost, I have been playing Yakuza 6. I got it yesterday. Holy shit. It's really good.
It's really good.
Yeah. What have you played in that series?
I played this. I still got Zero, and I'm still playing some of that. And I'm also going to get Yakuza Kiwami. So
this is just what's on PS4 right now?
Yeah.
Okay. I heard they've actually got a good like movie stuff to show you like what you missed in the other games.
Legit, yes, they do. So basically what they did is in the game when it starts, they do a thing where like it sort of ties into the around the end of Yakuza 5 when Kiryu is sort of on the verge of death, and also when his foster daughter Haruka, who you know makes her dream of becoming an idol singer, basically announces to the world that you know she is really proud of her father, even though he's a former Yakuza, and he ends up, you know, getting really badly injured. He's in a coma, and while he's there, under that in that coma, Date-san, you know, the detective, and his assistant come in and basically tell that Kiryu, because of the mess that he got into with the Tojo clan, he's basically going to be under arrest for suspicion of assault and property damage, and so he basically ends up spending 3 years in jail. And then eventually, 3 years later on, he goes back, he comes out, he goes back to Morning Glory, which, those of you don't know, that's the orphanage that he founded. He goes there, and then he finds out that a couple years before, Haruka had actually left Morning Glory, going to Kamurocho, which, you know, is the spot where a lot of these games take place in. She basically disappears, and that's kind of how the plot starts, as you're trying to find out where Haruka is. Also, Beat Takeshi is in the game. Well, I mean, he's a voice actor, so... I mean, if he was actually in the game, that would be awesome, but...
I want to say the kid from Battle Royale is actually too.
Yeah, I think he is, too.
He's one of his underlings.
Yeah, which is a nice tie-in. Keep in mind, though, Beat Takeshi Kitano has been a part of Japanese pop culture for well over 20 years now, so...
I still like that they just... They like Battle Royale enough to say, oh yeah, we should have that kid in too.
Yeah. So, on top of all this, of course, it's a Yakuza game, which means that on top of, you know, the amazing fucking plot and cinematic parts that they have for the game, and god damn, it is legitimately amazing. You've also got all the usual stuff that you do in a Yakuza game, where, go around doing quests, beating people up, you know, getting into fights. And then, of course, there's all the other shit that you can do in the game, which is pretty much almost taking over the game itself.
Waste your time doing whatever the hell you want.
Yeah, you can go to the batting cages, you can play billiards, you can go throw darts or do karaoke. You can go check stuff out at a magazine stand. You can... Go to Club Sega, where that's where you can play a bunch of full version of games that you can play. Everything from classics like, you know, Space Harrier and Outrun, Fantasy Zone, which I was especially happy to get my hands on because fuck, I love that game so much. And a fully playable version of Virtua Fighter 5. And the fact that they could actually have a game this big and intricate like Yakuza 6 and still have a fully played arcade, fully playable, not at all downgraded version arcade version of Virtua Fighter 5 just goes to show you how far the technology has gone.
Yeah. It's Gameception.
Yeah. I wasted like half of the yen I had playing Fantasy Zone.
You ever done this? There's like, you start running out of money and then you start to figure out like, okay, how am I going to earn more money so I can play more at the arcade?
Yeah, I got to go find some thugs and beat the crap out of them.
Take their money.
Yeah. But yeah, so, other than Yakuza 6, I've been doing the usual reading a bunch of light novels. I went back into the boxes of stuff in my closet, and I found my old copies of the old Slayers light novels that Tokyo Pop back in the day put out, the English translations they did. For those of you who don't know, it might be too young, Tokyo Pop is what we had before stuff like, you know, Viz and Yen Press and Kodansha Comics became a big thing over here. It was either them or Dark Horse.
Yeah,
back in the day. So I got those. Also reading, you know, certain Magical Index, Grimgar Fantasy and Ash. Also Strike the Blood, which is one I just started recently. It's also okay. Of course, anime, because, again, I got Netflix, and,
Netflix has a lot of anime.
Which has quite a lot of very high-quality anime, actually. It's got all of Madoka Magica that has been dubbed into English that you can watch. That includes the original series, the movies, all of it. But mostly I've been watching Fate Stay Night, you know, the Unlimited Blade Works version from UFO Table, which most people have told you is fucking amazing. Just one of the best animated regular TV anime you'll see. It's that fucking good. Also, sort of supplementing that with Fate Zero, which is its much, much darker prequel. holy shit, they almost don't even compare. Which is not surprising, considering it was that Fate Zero was written by Gen Urobuchi. You know, the guy behind, oh god, Saiyan Uda, fucking Kamen Rider Black, just the, you know, if Pat was here, he could basically talk your ear off, but.
Yeah.
Other than that, well, I've basically been spending the last few days fending off a fruit fly invasion.
nice.
Yeah, any of you guys ever had to deal with fruit flies before?
Oh, yes. Actually means there's food that's sitting out that shouldn't be.
Yeah. Well, basically, what happened is they just showed up in my cockatoo's living space one morning. I think they actually came up through the drain. And, you know, at first we just thought they were some gnats. And then we noticed that, holy shit, there's more of them. And before we knew it, they had spread throughout the house. So, what we ended up having to do is we ended up making some homemade vinegar traps and putting one pretty much in each room. Holy shit, if they didn't work.
Yeah, that's actually a very effective way of dealing with it.
So basically what happens is if you ever have a fruit fly problem, all you need to do is get like a cup or a bowl, something you can pour liquid into. Then you need to get a thing of apple cider vinegar and pour some into it. Not a whole lot, just enough that it'll fill up the bottom and we'll have, you know, it'll be touching sort of the sides. Then you need to put in a couple dollops of dish soap. You know, just one, two, a couple. Then you take some plastic wrapper or, you know, some kind of plastic covering, put it over, poke some holes in it, and then you just leave that out. The fruit flies will be attracted to the smell of the apple cider vinegar. They'll crawl in through the holes and won't be able to get back out, and the dish soap will suffocate them. And it works very fast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's pretty... pretty much what I've had to deal with this week.
Yep.
Ah, damn.
On the upside, spring is coming.
Yeah.
That's a good sign of it.
Whole winter is finally gone.
Yeah. So.
We had snow yesterday.
Yeah. Well, you live in, Ohio. I mean, yeah, you live in fucking Ohio. It's like, it snows half the year there.
Yeah, today it was like 55, but the wind chill made it feel like 45. It's like, oh, thank you.
Yeah. Anyways.
Yeah, well, anyway. All right, so anybody got anything they want to add before we move on?
I'm good.
You're good?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then, I guess then, we now need to move on to everybody's favorite part of the show, which is Brandon's Random Factoid. And this week, I'm just going to do a quick little one because we're going to kind of need the time because...
We got a lot to get through.
Holy shit. Yeah, we got a lot to get through this week. It doesn't look like a whole lot on the list, but there's stuff to talk about. So
shit happened this week.
Yeah. So today, I'm just going to... do something really quick, which is I'm going to talk a little bit about a food item that I recently discovered and have absolutely madly fallen in love with and which everybody needs to try at least once. It's a concoction that comes from China. It's a particular type of chili oil, but it's so much more than that. It's called Lao Gan Ma Chili Crisp. Okay. What it is, yeah, what it is it's a spicy chili sauce, okay?
Yeah.
But the chili sauce is made up of a variety of chilies, you know, mixed together. Then they put in, you know, the vinegar. Then they fry up some garlic chips and some chopped onions and dried onions and all that stuff. They mix it all together and they put it in a bottle. And it's spicy and it's crispy. And like a 4-ounce bottle of this stuff will cost you like about $8. And let's just say it's one of those things that you really don't need to use it with anything else because you will straight eat it up out of the jar. It goes good on everything. It goes good on rice, on eggs, on pizza, on tamales, on just about anything you can think of. Mm. And it's delicious. Mm. And let's just say it's one of those things, like, you taste this, like, your life will never be the same again.
Yeah, I'll keep an eye out for it.
Yeah, so chili crisp, but that's something everybody needs to get a taste of, because holy crap, is it good. It's so very, very good. But that's going to be Brandon's random factoid for today. Wait, little one, but we need it because we had to move on. So we're going to start off with the show proper with the part that we hate the most, but we have to get out of the way, which is the asshole of the week. And it's Wells Fargo. So Wells Fargo has already gotten into some serious shit before, right?
Yeah, it's not the first time.
It's not the first time. But this week, they're facing a fine, a federal fine of over $1 billion over loan abuses.
Yep. These pertain to mortgage and auto loans.
Yeah. By the way, if any of that sounds familiar, this is kind of the same shit that's kind of caused the housing crash.
Yeah, auto loans especially are getting pretty bad.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so this is still up in the air. They are obviously talking with the federal regulators about this stuff to come to a new deal. But yeah, they've got some shit potentially coming their way.
Oh, yes, they do.
This would be the highest ever fine imposed by the Consumer Bureau.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep, so... Hey, fuck the banks.
Yeah, they keep giving us reasons to say that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just... I mean, is that... You come to a point where you're like, is there any reason why we should continue to let you people just do this?
Yeah.
Like, you not guys just, already...
Not just go to, like, local banks. Yeah. National ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you guys already sank us into an economic crisis that hadn't been as bad since the Great Depression once already.
Yeah.
And now we're just, you're doing the same crap that started it, and did you learn nothing?
Yeah, of course I didn't learn nothing.
God, it's just everywhere. These people are infuriating.
Yeah.
But at the very least, we do have something to sort of wipe that taste out of our mouths. Because we got our heroes of the week. And it's the parents at Sandy Hook. Now, the Sandy Hook massacre was one of those horrific events that horrified just everybody. Except for Alex Jones, who kind of thought it was a false flag.
You know, because that's what he does.
It was a hoax. Yeah. And basically unleashed a horde of Sandy Hook truthers onto the world. harassing and sending death threats to the parents of the victims of the children.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Families. Well, this week they've all gotten together and they're going to file a defamation lawsuit against Alex Jones.
Good.
Well, not all of them, but this pertains to the parents of two of the kids that were shot, that died in that shooting. Yeah, they say Alex Jones has repeated lies and conspiratorial ravings have led to death threats. The suits join at least two other recent cases accusing the InfoWars host of defamation. So yeah, each suit is seeking more than $1 million in damages. And let's see, from Jones, InfoWars, and a related company, Free Speech Systems LLC. Ironic.
Yeah.
One of the reporters is also named in one of the suits, Owen Schroyer. As I say, even after these folks had to experience this trauma for the next 5 years, they were tormented by Alex Jones' vicious lies about them. It's the lawyer for the case, Mark Bankston. And these lies were meant to convince his audience that the Sandy Hook parents are frauds and have perpetrated a sinister lie on the American people. Yeah, let's see. Yeah.
I think the important thing to point out here is that people are calling Alex Jones on his shit publicly now and legally.
Yeah. Yeah. And, well, you know, lay down with dogs, don't expect to get fleas, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So,
frankly, yeah, so I guess these are not the only ones, as we mentioned. In March, the man who recorded the daily car attack at last year's white supremacist rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, sued Jones for calling him a deep state shill and a CIA asset, helped to organize the attack. He's not, and he did not do that.
Right.
That's he called him the guy that killed the people, or the woman. And guess what? He wasn't.
What?
He wasn't the guy that killed him, so...
Yeah.
There's another lawsuit Bankston filed earlier this month. He sued on behalf of the 24-year-old man who, InfoWars falsely identified as the Parkland shooter.
Right.
So yeah, he's got a good track record of calling out these people. Could potentially cost him at least a few million dollars.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, he just calls out anybody, regardless of whether it's true or not. It's just...
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. There are a few people in the world who I genuinely loathe and despise, but Alex Jones is one of them.
Yeah. Because here's the thing about Alex Jones, a lot of people don't realize. You know how they say that on the one hand, he's like deeply crazy paranoid, and then on the other hand, he claims he's like a performance artist? The truth of the matter is, he drank so much of his Kool-Aid that it's impossible to tell the difference between the two.
Yeah.
Because on the one hand, it is true that that's the defense he always uses. That, you know, he's just sort of playing a character.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, people who've known him have said that, no, he's much worse in person.
Yeah.
Like, he is legit a complete nutcase.
Yep.
And he is legit mentally unstable.
Yeah.
Which, I'll bet you that was a shock, isn't it?
He's mentally unstable with a platform. So, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, exactly.
He's real good at exploiting his audience.
Yep.
But, dude is legit crazy. And he's going to hurt himself or someone at some point. It is literally only a matter of time.
Yeah, that's not speculation. That's pretty... I'm pretty sure that's going to happen.
The man is a ticking time bomb, and we all... Basically, the only thing we can do is hear the ticks and hope to God we're not in the vicinity when it finally goes off.
Yeah.
But anyway, now... We're getting in, going off from there, to the proper show proper. And first thing we got to talk about is the DNC, the Democratic National Committee. They have officially filed lawsuits alleging Russia government, the Russian government, the Trump campaign, and the WikiLeaks all conspired together.
Yeah, this probably isn't too surprising.
No. The truth of the matter is, I don't... the idea that this was like this one overarching sort of intricate conspiracy between all three of these parties together, I actually don't quite buy that. I think it was more a degree of an interlocking group of very egotistical, very bad people all trying to go after their own self-interest, and it all just kind of coordinated in that fashion.
So
there is, let's see, they got Julian Assange, Donald Trump Jr., Paul Manafort, Roger Stone, Jared Kushner, George Papadopoulos, Rick Gates, and John Does 1-10.
I guess that's the
John Does 1-10.
Yeah, those are the unnamed.
Yeah, among others, those are all the people that so far are named in this suit.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the most surprising is that they actually went all in on this and actually filed.
Oh,
this.
Yes.
Because I guess they're hoping that Bob Mueller has stuff to sort of back up all of this. I don't know if they do, but I hope for their sake they do.
Unless they're forewarned.
If they feel... Yeah, I mean, if they feel confident enough that the actual DNC itself... Remember, this isn't just groups. This isn't just a few people within the Democratic Party who are bringing this lawsuit. It's the actual honest-to-goodness DNC.
Yeah,
like the hit, the actual top of the actual party bringing this. That would suggest that they think they've actually got enough material together to actually make a solid case.
Yeah, I guess we're essentially going to have to see how this all plays out.
Yeah. But, we'll basically just have to see. Since they've only just filed it, we've got no ideas about a trial or a court date or any of that stuff yet, so.
Yeah. No, just have Trump yelling on Twitter about Wendy Wasserman Schultz.
Mm-hmm.
That's not her name.
Mm-hmm.
He's got
her name's Debbie Wasserman Schultz, you idiot.
Yeah.
I don't think she's even in the DNC anymore. She retired stepped down or whatever.
Yeah, she stepped down when the hack happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like right before the convention.
Yeah.
Yeah. But otherwise, we actually got some really good news. News that honestly kind of shocked me. I never thought I would see this in my lifetime. But North and South Korea, next week, will be holding a summit where they're going to be discussing a peace treaty or a potential peace treaty.
Hmm.
And I guess it's gone far enough that there's another article. North Korea says they will dismantle their nuclear site. Stop weapons test.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Seems like this is all going to happen.
Some kind of cooler heads are prevailing over there in Pyongyang. I'm not sure what's happened, but...
Yeah.
I guess a lot of work by Moon. Their new president.
Yeah, a lot of it.
Hmm.
Yeah, him and the Kim Jong-un's representatives have been talking a lot over the last couple of years. Moon was already reaching out to the folks at the DPRK before Trump was elected. So this is kind of the culmination of a lot of work him and his people have been undertaking almost ceaselessly over the last few years.
Yeah.
But I want everybody to consider this. When the Korean War happened, my grandma was in high school.
And my grandfather fought in it.
Mm-hmm. Like, that is legit how long this conflict has been going on.
Yeah.
It's kind of just been a stalemate since then.
Yeah, because a lot of people forget that although the Korean War itself never really ended, it was more of, it got to a point where everybody just sort of, they just ceased active offensive hostilities against each other and just sort of made a DMZ and kind of stared at each other for 50-some-odd years. Yeah.
To the point where I think South Korea was at some points just playing K-pop as loud as they could, just to annoy the guys on the other side.
But eventually, there was just a generation that was born on both sides that had just gotten sick of all this shit. And we're finally like, you know what? We've been going at this crap too long. It's time to start patching things up.
Yeah.
Especially with that crazy Trump guy on the other side of the ocean that wants to bomb us.
Speaking of which, this is actually a... Because here's the thing. The U.S. is going to be involved in these negotiations because they have to. We have to.
Don't you think they're just going to keep Trump as far away from them as possible?
Well, there's a part of North Korea's actions, although they are good, don't get me wrong, it's also strategic in nature, because the reason, they're trying to make themselves the most rational party here, because they have the ones with the most to lose, and they figured out, it's like, all right, look, and for the record, the North Korea has gone on record for years that they are more than ready to denuclearize at any point. Just as long as they can guarantee their own protection and won't be at risk of getting, the target of any kind of nuclear weaponry from any other country.
Yeah.
But they're basically trying to make themselves to be the rational party here. So they're ready to completely denuclearize. And I don't have a lot of confidence that they will completely denuclearize, because, let's be honest, if I was them, I would keep at least one or two in storage somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, Kim is very paranoid.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if the U.S. ends up, doing something stupid during these negotiations, they won't have the DPRK to blame in this case.
Yeah. On the other hand, if this does go through and they are able to sign a peace treaty, this is going to be a lot of support work for South Korea to be doing.
Well, it's not going to be just them. China's probably going to be in on it, too. Because China is pretty much the DPRK's only real trading partner.
Yeah.
And if, the peace treaty is get signed, then that means that they can start rolling back all those sanctions.
Yeah.
And, they'll have more capital flowing in and out of the country.
Yeah. I think it's going to be interesting, because we're, in our lifetime, we're actually going to see a country get rebuilt if this goes through.
Yeah.
And that's
One of the other things that's going to happen is if the peace treaty does get signed, it means they can finally, that North Korea can roll back the Songun policy. Which is where, because of the nature of defense, they basically almost all of their funding goes towards their military.
Yeah.
Remember, DPRK, as poor as it is, also has like the sixth largest military in the world.
Yeah.
Which means that if that does that, then they can start rolling back the Songun, which means all the money can go back to all those very much, very underfunded, infrastructure and welfare stuff that they have.
You just kind of modernize the whole country.
Yeah.
You ever see the sort of nighttime shots from satellites of all the lights going up in around the world? Like, there's one part of Korea that's just almost completely black.
Yeah. That's partly because people forget that shot is actually put at around like 1 a.m. Like around Korean time. So reason it's mostly dark up in Korea is because they shut down all the electricity around 10 o'clock at night. So
that they even have to do that sort of thing is indicative of where they're at.
Yeah.
But here's an interesting question. If the peace treaty goes through and they finally open up, what does this mean economically for both North and South Korea? Does this mean that they're going to allow folks to cross the DMZ and work on the other side?
I'd imagine that probably one of the one of the clauses in this treaty is the abolition of the DMZ.
Yeah.
It would kind of have to. Otherwise, something like this just doesn't work.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they'll have some kind of security checkpoint still there, at least for the short term. But it's going to be really interesting because you got to understand the big prediction for years has always been that North Korea was going to collapse. Mm. You know, that it was just their whole infrastructure, just their whole system was finally just going to overripen and just collapse in on itself. And then you were going to have a bunch of North Korean refugees crossing over the mountains, heading into South Korea. And it would basically completely screw up their economy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm really seeing, because I want people to understand this about North Korea, is because they still kind of sort of operate under the old, you know, Soviet-style regime. One of the things about that is that basically everyone that lives there is supposed to be guaranteed a job of some sort.
Yeah.
If the country does reunite and become a single country again, you're going to have a bunch of folks who are going to need work.
Yeah, and, but you're going to have a lot to do, so there will be work.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, the Chinese, I know for a fact the Chinese will be involved in helping getting that stuff together. So, you know, they'll probably help in getting their system together on how to get hiring and stuff like that. It's amazing to think. I never thought I would see this in my lifetime, but it looks like it's finally happening.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I'm curious to see their attempts to de-propagandize these people.
That's going to be some work.
Thinking pretty much everybody outside their country is evil.
Yeah.
Especially Americans.
Yeah, it's going to take
the vast majority of us don't give a shit about them, really.
Yeah. Basically, it's going to take time, basically.
Yeah.
It is.
Because you're going to have to help these folks get slowly eased back into a capitalist system. And,
let's be clear here, you know, this a peace treaty does not necessarily equate to reunification.
No.
They might still end up as separate countries, but they may, you know, be able to coexist finally. So.
Yeah, they'll be on friendlier terms, and there will be more, you know, freedom of movement, that kind of thing.
And then, you know, then maybe reunification makes sense down the road. Who knows?
Yeah. I doubt that it's going to be something that's going to happen very, you know, quickly, because not just because of politics, but two very distinct cultures have developed in both of those countries over the years. So, you know, all right. So moving on from there. Oh boy, this is just delightful. So Michael Cohen, who of course is President Trump's attorney, aka the says who guy. So basically he is in court right now. And the judge basically said that he had to name his clients.
One of the chief finance officers in the RNC.
Chief financial officers in the RNC. I'm trying to remember what the guy's name was.
I don't know. He's the guy that essentially had a contract with the woman that...
Wasn't it like Papadopoulos or something like that?
No, it was somebody else. Somebody nobody's ever heard of.
Yeah,
but he had like this... He had this affair with like, what was it, like a Playboy model or something?
Yeah, essentially like a contract with her to pay her for this sex and then got her pregnant.
Yeah.
So she sued him for...
And then paid like $2 million for an abortion or something like that.
A couple million dollars, either to have an abortion or for the kid. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. That's the kind of people we're dealing with here.
Yeah,
but then here's the thing. He has another third client that he hadn't revealed the names to. And because Michael Cohen is in deep trouble right now, he is basically, the judge basically told him, look, man, you're going to have to tell us who that third client is. And so he revealed who it was. It was Sean Hannity.
Dun, dun, dun.
You know, I didn't see that coming, but holy crap, it makes all the sense in the world.
Yep. And he's been spending a lot of time saying, oh, he's not actually my lawyer. I don't pay him for anything. I just talk to him about legal stuff every once in a while.
Yeah. I don't know him, man. He's just the guy that gets me weed.
And he said, I never retained his services. I never received an invoice. I never paid Michael Cohen for legal fees.
Yeah. And in the meantime, basically every, pretty much since all this stuff happened on his show, he's been doing everything he possibly can to defend both President Trump and Michael Cohen's character.
Yeah, he's been doing that for a while now, where people are like, that's fucked up.
If yeah.
You didn't say, come out and say you had a relationship with Cohen.
Yeah, it's a conflict of interest, dude.
Even people at Fox News, like Shepard Smith.
Yeah.
Who has also said he's just an entertainment guy.
Yeah.
But still, it's sort of that thing where, you know, you want to build up trust in your people, and it's like, oh, you're just talking about this guy all the time, defending his honor because you're working with him.
Yeah. And I think somebody actually brought it up to him on Twitter. It was like, you know, dude, you're not bringing this forth shows a serious conflict of interest. Why should we trust you as a journalist? And then Hannity tweets him back, I'm not a journalist, dumbass. I'm a talk show host.
Okay. That's quite telling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like that's when Alex Jones says he's not, he's just
a
doing
raving lunatic. He's just a performance artist.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the last resort of a scoundrel right there. Mm-hmm.
And essentially Fox News has talked to him, done whatever investigation they did and said, while Fox News was unaware of Sean Hannity's informal relationship with Michael Cohen, was surprised by the announcement in court yesterday, we've reviewed the matter and spoken to Sean, and he continues to have our full support.
Yeah.
Basically, yeah, whatever.
Which is basically in fancy word, their fancy way of saying, yeah, we're kind of making like Pontius Pilate here, and we're washing our hands of this shit. Whatever happens, happens.
Because
yeah. Remember, that's kind of the same thing they said right like a week before O'Reilly was fired. So
yeah.
And it's like, okay, if you're actually not his client, then he lied in court.
Yeah. So either way, yeah, so either way, good for the entire party involved.
Let's see. Some of Hannity's own explanations are also head-scratching. On the radio earlier in the day, Hannity said, I might have handed him $10. Told Cohen I definitely want attorney-client privilege on this at times. Okay. It's like that's not exactly what you said before.
No.
You know, in fact, you mentioned that, you know, because Hannity, he has his radio show, and the day that this came out, that this story broke, it actually broke like a few minutes before he was going to go on the air.
Yeah, and they mentioned the weird way he describes himself as he probably says he is not a journalist, though at other times he calls himself an opinion journalist. Says this show is real news. Because, like, Shepard Smith kept calling him an entertainment guy. He's like, no, we break news. We talk about the real news. It's like, no, that's...
And now he's turning around saying, no, I'm just a talk show host.
Yeah.
Like, it's a very obvious case of trying to have your cake and eat it, too.
Yeah. Like, and he said on Twitter that he assumed his conversations with Cohen were confidential.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, until Cohen is getting sued over this shit and taken to court.
Yes.
Then it's potentially going to become important to the investigation.
Yeah. So the funny thing was, because I have some friends who, like, occasionally hate listen to his radio show. And, like I said, the story broke a few minutes before he was going to on the air. So you know what ended up happening? They basically just played music for, like, and commercials for, like, the first 15 minutes of the show while he was trying to come up with what he was going to say.
Yeah, And the weird thing is, ultimately, none of this really matters.
Yeah.
It's just another notch in this Michael Cohen story that just goes nuts. Which then you see Trump and a bunch of other people in the GOP essentially shitting themselves at the thought of him flipping. Which is like, you don't worry about that if there's nothing to hide.
Yeah.
But then again, I mean, they're not blind. I mean, this guy is like a freaking, like a Sopranos reject. Like, he's...
Yeah, it's like with the whole, the stuff that's going on with James Comey in his book.
Yeah.
And the coordinated campaign by the GOP to try and discredit him as much as they can.
Mm-hmm.
I think even to the point where they have some guy dressed up in a lion costume.
Oh, yes.
Going to his book
signing.
The guy
in the lion fur suit going around to all of his book signings.
Lion Comey is the name he uses, which, you know, another brilliant name.
Also really, really juvenile.
Oh, yeah, this is the GOP.
Yeah, I mean, holy crap, talk about just standards just tumbling.
That's because all the sensible people left the party.
Yeah.
Or on the way out.
Mm-hmm. But,
Yeah.
But, yeah, so how... Does anybody know how long Michael Cohen has actually been Trump's lawyer?
Like 15 years? I think I kept reading people saying, is he 15 years loyal?
Yeah. That basically means that this dude's probably going to have mob ties.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And considering that, you know, Donald Trump is a business magnate from New York.
I've seen Goodfellas. I know how this works.
Yeah, you know, it's not very hard to connect the dots there.
Hmm.
Yeah, and I guess somebody at Forbes was talking about how, you know, they do the richest people list all the time. Talk about how somebody named John Barron kept talking to him about how rich Trump was.
A gentleman named John Barron who sounds an awful lot like Donald Trump.
Yeah. Yeah, see, it took decades to unwind the elaborate farce Trump had built, including the claim that he was worth $100 million instead of roughly $5 million, a former Forbes reporter explained.
God, no, that's just sad.
This whole thing where he's also acted as his own publicist at times, which I think is John Oliver has done bits on that thing. Talk about how he's never going to invite Trump to his show, but he would invite, I think it was like John Miller's the guy's name, the fake publicist.
John Miller, John Barron, he's had like a couple aliases.
But he said he would invite John Miller to come onto his show and talk about it. I think he even had like a nice little like table set up with the sort of paper wall kind of covering so he wouldn't have to show his face.
Yeah.
Yeah, all that sort of stupid shit.
Yeah,
it's a comedy of bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to make you just know that years down the road they're going to be making a fucking miniseries on Netflix about this shit.
Oh, yeah.
People that have no knowledge of anything that happened will be like, this didn't happen. This is too fucking stupid and ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like, well, if you your wrote grandkids this as a book and just like... changed all the names and the proper names and all that, it would not get made into a book by any serious publishing company.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That would have been published as like one of the indie things on Amazon Kindle.
Mm-hmm. Pretty
much.
It costs
like 99 cents and it's got some kids drawing as the cover.
Yeah.
Anyways.
But, the Michael Cohen stuff doesn't end there, because, you don't know, he had a libel lawsuit he was filing against BuzzFeed and Fusion GPS, because of the Steele dossier.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, he dropped it this week.
It's almost like
I think he's a little busy.
Well, I think it's also partly that they probably came to the point where he had to actually back up his claims, and they're like, I think we're going to have to drop this.
It's like, Facts. Oh, well, we don't have any of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Cohen's dismissal notices offer no explanation for why he was dropping the case. The decision to voluntarily discontinue these cases was a difficult one. Cohen's lawyer, David Schwartz, said by email, mm-hmm. "We believe the defendants defamed by client and vindicating Mr. Cohen's rights was and still remains important, but given the events that have unfolded and the time, attention, and resources needed to prosecute these matters, we dismiss the matters despite their merits."
Hmm.
We got bigger things to worry about, I guess.
Yeah. So, okay, that's good news.
Oh, boy. But, it just gets funnier and funnier. Because guess what? Trump's got a new member of his legal team now.
Hmm.
Oh, gee, yeah. It's Rudy freaking Giuliani.
Hmm. So what's his legal experience, I'm wondering? Was he an actual lawyer at one point?
Let's see. He was on CNN doing an interview. Giuliani said he wants to be clear. His role in the legal team will be limited.
Mm-hmm.
His focus will be interfacing with special counsel Robert Mueller and his Russia probe to help bring everything to a conclusion.
Hmm.
So basically to pester Mueller.
Yeah, pretty much. God, he just won't go away.
No.
Because nobody wants him.
Yeah.
You know what he actually does? He runs a cybersecurity firm.
Which is serious. Like,
talk about somebody you never trust with that.
Mm-hmm.
He was the mayor of New York at one point, though.
Yeah, but
and he was also the mayor on 9/11, which he will never freaking let anyone forget.
I'm not sure that's a high point in your career.
He's also 73 years old and doesn't have any tech experience.
Yeah.
That suggests he should be running a cybersecurity firm.
Yeah.
He is also
one of the most sleazy and amoral people to ever be mayor of that city. And this is New York we're talking about, so that's saying something.
And they were a shithole for decades.
Yeah.
Until they rebuilt things in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's his new position now. Annoying Robert Mueller.
Yeah. All right, well, now we're finally moving off the Trump part.
Mostly.
Yeah. So, this week, the FBI, Federal Bureau of Investigation, the DHS, Department of Homeland Security, and the UK's NCSE.
National Cybersecurity Center.
Yep. All got together, and they issued a joint alert, basically telling the world, hey, Russia's been hacking your shit. Y'all might want to start paying attention to that.
It's going to keep going on for a while.
Yep. It's still happening. So, yeah. Have fun.
Yes, have fun with that.
Let's see. Let's see here. In a press conference about the alert, White House Cybersecurity Coordinator Rob Joyce said the U.S. and its allies had high confidence that Russia was behind the quote-unquote broad campaign.
Mm-hmm.
They have millions of machines directing data around the net. Millions of machines directing data around the net are being targeted. Compromised devices were used to look at data passing through them. Attackers sought to undermine the firewalls and intrusion detection systems organizations used to spot malicious traffic. They are essentially going at the security points of a lot of these systems for the government. Various governments and all that. Principal targets of the global campaign were internet service providers, firms running critical infrastructure, government departments, and large companies. Detailed information about attack methods, signs left when hardware had been compromised, how networks change when they have been breached. Also offering advice to firms, ways to configure their systems correctly, and how to apply patches to address hardware vulnerabilities. The GCHQ, which is the parent company of the NCSC, That's sort of their FBI, is it?
Yeah,
they've been tracking the threat posed by Russian cyber gangs for more than 20 years.
Yeah, they kind of have to because, you know, they kind of live near them.
Yeah. And obviously that's...
They don't have a whole ocean between them like we do.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they've been keeping an eye on them since the Cold War ended.
Yep.
But
yeah, it's something that anybody that's hoping to have fair elections in the next 6 months or so should be paying attention to.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
But
America?
Probably aren't. It's like, oh, they're never going to hack us.
they kind of did. Repeatedly. And they did it in ways that you didn't really think would have worked.
Oh.
Like, just basically scattershotting political ads on all topics.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And seeing which one sticks.
Yeah. So, that was great.
Yeah. Anyways. But, anyway, so, and next up, I don't know why this story makes me giggle, but it does. Chuck Schumer actually put forth a piece of legislation today to introduce marijuana decriminalization. Well, actually, legalization. Decriminalization only means that it wouldn't be a felony anymore, just a misdemeanor.
Well, that's what this is, to decriminalize marijuana on the federal level. Essentially put it in the state's hands to decide whether they're going to legalize it or not.
Yeah. And the best thing is, since this would be like legislated, Sessions couldn't do a goddamn thing about it.
Yeah. Yeah, the very dangerous weed that he is concerned about.
Yeah.
He says
now here's the question. Now here's the question. Does this thing have even a ghost of a chance of getting passed?
Probably not, but I would assume that this is just a further platform for the Democrats.
Probably.
Because I think you probably saw news a couple weeks ago that John Boehner joined some marijuana firm, I think.
Yes, he did.
Essentially saying, there's going to be money here. I want in on it.
Yeah.
Yes, John Boehner, former Speaker of the House.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's working for a cannabis company now.
Yep.
And it's been pretty recent that Democrats have been realizing, hey, this is a pretty good platform for us to run on.
Yeah.
Because a number of states have already legalized it, and guess what? They didn't fall apart.
Nope.
No. They're doing quite well. Yes.
Yeah. So... It's funny to see him as a really old guy. Basically saying, hey, weed is cool. He has a quote here, if smoking marijuana doesn't hurt anybody else, why shouldn't we allow people to do it and not make it criminal?
Yeah,
so why didn't you say any of this shit when you were still in the House, dumb fuck?
Yep.
Because at that time, it was still the war on drugs.
Yeah,
so marijuana is... a Schedule I substance, I think it is.
Yeah, it is.
Basically classifies marijuana as dangerous as heroin for legal and regulatory purposes, even though sensible-wise, it's probably not.
No. But
because it is criminalized federally, we can't do the studies to test it, really. You have to go through a ton of work and to get the clearances for that stuff in. Most people can't do it.
No.
So yeah, this bill would also establish funding for women and minority-owned marijuana businesses, require more research on the drug's public health impact, and maintain federal authority to regulate commercial advertising, similar to the existing regulations for tobacco and alcohol. Obviously, he didn't announce this on 420 for nothing.
Of course not.
Oh, I guess he had a interview on Thursday with Vice News Tonight on HBO. He also signed a bong on that segment. So for the
show, just letting you know how we've
changed.
Yeah. He wants anything to get the pot smokers vote.
Yeah.
Talk about John Boehner here. I guess Mitch McConnell actually did something positive. He introduced legislation last week to permanently decriminalize hemp, which is good for his home state of Kentucky.
No, honestly, though, it's just a half step. It ain't.
Yeah, that's definitely what they say here. Took a baby step in that direction.
Yeah, that is the babiest of baby step you could possibly take.
We're going to legalize this thing that is still kind of weed, but not really. You're not going to sit here and smoke the hemp and get high on it, at least not in the same way.
It's probably going to cause it. I don't know if anybody listening to us is old enough to remember this, but back in the 90s, there was this big movement to sudden, like in the early 90s, to suddenly start legalizing hemp
Like try and use it to
in general.
replace like
You
cotton
know,
and all
hemp for
that.
paper, hemp for rope, use the seeds for oil and soap. That was the chant. And
They
I mean,
called
it
those
was,
people hippies, basically.
yeah, it was, it, the truth of the matter is, looking back, it's a very obvious what people were really trying to do. Because they were trying to do, like, you know, we, they were trying to start, it was a clever but pretty transparent attempt to sort of legitimize the weed legalization cause.
And to be like, hey, you legalized hemp, guess what? It's secretly marijuana. You know, Ralph Nader was on that shit for like 15 years. But anyway, so moving on. This one's from, this is an Icelandic story. And it has nothing to do with their unbelievably sexy pop stars. No. So there was a Bitcoin heist. And the suspect, he was imprisoned. And then he walked out of it. And then he actually fled the country on the same flight that Iceland's prime minister was on. Yeah, this is some hitman shit right here.
Oh, yes.
So yeah, this involves Sindri Thor Stefansson. Very Icelandic name. He is supposedly the mastermind behind the theft of 600 computers used to mine Bitcoin in Iceland. Has escaped from prison, fled to Sweden on a plane that reportedly carried the Icelandic prime minister. He escaped through a window of the low security Sogn prison, Sogn, in rural southern Iceland before boarding a flight to Sweden at the international airport in Keflavik, located 59 miles from the prison on Tuesday. Police said he traveled under a passport in someone else's name but was identified by a surveillance video. Their police chief said he had an accomplice. We're sure of that. See, guards of the prison, which has no fences, where inmates have access to the internet, phones, geez, I wonder where he coordinated this stuff with, did not report him missing until after the flight to Sweden had taken off. He had been in custody since February, was moved to the low security prison 11 days ago. Yeah, this is fucking hitman and prison break. Except if you just fucking pulled down, sent him to the low security prison, it's like, oh, I just have to get out of this room and then I can basically walk out. Yeah, they warrant set on an international warrant has been issued for his arrest. No arrest has been made in Sweden. Yeah, so the Icelandic Prime Minister was going to a meeting with India's Prime Minister in Stockholm on Tuesday. Yeah, so this is just a pretty crazy scenario that happened.
Yeah, it's.
I should point out the prime minister part is completely unrelated. It's just a fun fact of the whole thing.
It's just like, oh, he just happened to be on the same flight as the most important person in the country.
Yeah, pretty much.
With,
Yeah,
let's be honest, with the most security.
they talked to a sociology professor at the University of Iceland, Helgi Gunnlaugsson. He said prison breaks in Iceland usually means someone just fled to get drunk. The underworlds are tiny and it's extremely difficult to hide, let alone flee the country.
Yeah, also people got to remember that the way the prisons work over in Scandinavia is a little very
Different.
different from how they operate over here.
Yeah.
Their prisons are basically halfway homes.
Yeah, because they're islands.
Yeah.
There's not too
Like,
many
fuck,
places
where
to go.
are they gonna go?
Unless you manage to, like this guy, get to the airport and get on a flight, you're not really getting out of here. You're not boating somewhere.
But see, like, if you go to prison in Scandinavia, you know, it's because, okay, look, so you go to a prison in the U.S., what do you end up getting? You're locked in a, like, what, like a 5x9 cell,
And usually it's
behind
steel bars,
steel bars. You got a bunk bed.
guards all over the place.
Maybe you'll have a TV in there if you're lucky. You have to go
Depending
to a
on what
cat.
sort of prison you're at.
Yeah, and you know, you only get out when you're able to go exercise in the exercise yard or go eat.
It usually has at least a couple of fences
Yeah, and
between
it
you and
is
the
very
outlet.
regimented. And you got to deal with like prison gangs and all that shit. You go to prison in Scandinavia, you get a rather nice apartment-like room with a TV. You usually get a video game console. You get knives and cutlery to help make your own dinner. You usually got like a little kitchen in there with you. You got a nice bed. You got nice warm clothes. You're pretty much free to wander the grounds as long as you don't try to, you know, jump the fence or whatever. And they have probably one of the lowest recidivism rates in the Western world. Think
Just
about
saying.
that, America. So, moving on from there. Next story is from Stockholm, Sweden. Yeah, so over in Stockholm, they hired an artist to put up a mural on the side of a building, as you do. That's, you know, what murals are. And yeah, the dude painted a giant, like, what was it, like a like a 10-story penis, blue
Five
penis,
stories.
5-story blue penis on the side of the building.
Yep,
And as you can
it's.
imagine, the residents of Stockholm aren't exactly okay with that.
And the mural is titled Fuck the World.
Well, it's doing that.
It was scheduled to stay up for 6 months, but it's probably not going to stay on for too long.
No.
I wonder why.
So I believe it's going to be taken down in less than a week. So this was done by Carolina Falkholt, one of the most renowned graffiti artists in the country. She told the local, that's the local paper, that phallophobes should consider what it is they are so upset about and then talk about it. Sex is so important, but it's always been too dirty to discuss.
Yeah, that may be true.
I think the big problem
But
is she did not tell them ahead of time what she was planning to work on.
yeah.
Because it says here, the company that owns the block told them it had seen the work by the artist for the first time on Wednesday morning, along with other residents of the Swedish capital's central Kungsholmen Island. Culture and art are important in developing interesting urban environments. Of course, we care about artistic freedom, but at the same time, we must respect neighbors' opinions.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that, yeah, the 50, 60-foot tall penis on the side of my building would, yeah, it would probably annoy me a little bit.
Yeah,
And I guess it's not this artist's first controversial penis painting either. She did this in New York in December. She painted a similar giant erection, this time in pink, orange, and red, on a wall in Manhattan's Lower East Side. That painting was erased only after a few days, rather than the 3 weeks intended, following heavy media coverage and vociferous complaints from residences or residents. She said, "I usually paint giant vaginas, pussies, and cunts, and since I had just finished one on the side of a 5-story building, I felt like a dick was needed. The wall space on room was a perfect fit for it. To paraphrase the artist Judith Bernstein, if a dick can go into a woman, it can go up on a wall."
Okay. So I think...
That checks out.
Yeah. Seems legit.
Yeah.
We talk about Stone Records now.
I do love the world we live in now.
Yeah.
But, alright, next up. There was a... Okay, so this was in Indianapolis. Some firefighters were surprised when this woman comes in with a pet raccoon that was, well, just wasted out of its mind. Just, okay, you know what? I'm just going to read the story because it's hilarious. Okay, so Indianapolis. People turn to firefighters for help during all kinds of emergencies, but this one might actually be a first. God damn it, who wrote this thing? Wayne Township firefighters woke up in the middle of the night to a woman frantically pushing the doorbell. Quote, as many times as the doorbell in the fire was pushed, the firefighters were quite certain that something bad was going on outside, said Wayne Township Fire Captain Mike Pruitt. The woman was upset and saying she needed treatment, not for herself, but for her pet raccoon. The reason? She said the raccoon had been exposed to a large amount of marijuana.
Surprisingly, when they tweeted about this, they had a picture of a stoned raccoon.
That they somehow, like, because that's, yeah, like, it's out there, apparently. Yeah. This exists.
That's a thing that's happened already.
Yeah. Quote, they could tell that the raccoon was lethargic and met all of those symptoms that we typically run into when someone's been exposed to marijuana, Pruitt said. It really left the guys scratching their heads that someone brought a raccoon to the firehouse at 2 in the morning seeking help. And especially with the condition the animal was in, so we hope that the raccoon made a full recovery. Pruitt said the firefighters felt bad because as much as they love animals, there wasn't much they could do except let time take its course.
Yeah, it doesn't really go anywhere. It's just like, well, you can't do anything. Just go
I mean,
it'll work itself out.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Just let him take a nap. He'll get up. He'll probably be kind of hungry. Just...
Yeah.
It'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a great time. That's basically.
I would imagine this person was also high at the same time.
Oh, well, considering how many times they hit the doorbell, it's
probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was probably just stoned and paranoid. Oh god! 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 The raccoon, it's stoned. We gotta help it. How do we help a stoned raccoon? For the firehouse.
Now, did she drive over there?
I don't know. They don't mention.
Because now, if she actually tried to drive over there, I would be a little concerned. Mm. But they don't say so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing that happened.
Yeah. Well, next up, we got a story from California, especially the city of Victorville. So as everybody knows, California has been experiencing a serious drought. And, of course, the forest fires, because those are usually related in California.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you live in a giant dry state like that.
Yeah.
Well, they've sent out a call for help because that city is being invaded and just straight overrun by, believe it or not, tumbleweeds.
Yep.
Just a ton of tumbleweeds. Seriously, look at the picture.
I got a picture of a YouTube video and some tweets showing that wherever they could gather, like they show one of the houses in the video, and you can't see the front door. It's going up towards the second floor, this pile of tumbleweeds.
Yep.
Because I guess they had a very windy day, nearly 50 miles an hour, which meant any loose stuff like tumbleweeds could just be swept up and blown around to wherever it could gather up.
Pretty much.
Yeah, about 100 homeowners needed assistance clearing out this mess.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
And see, the crazy thing about tumbleweeds is that they are extremely thorny. They connect together like Legos, You can't reach out and grab them and move them. You need special tools. They really hurt.
Yeah, yeah. They do. Yeah, people, because most tumbleweeds are like, people don't realize tumbleweeds are like, well, technically they're not a species of plant, but they're like a group of plants, and they all have a very distinct sort of life cycle. And the part where they decide to just sort of detach themselves and start, you know, tumbling is usually late in their life cycle. It's actually part of how they reproduce, believe it or not.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I guess the city dispatched code enforcement officers, public works crews, and its trash hauling contractors to start clearing the neighborhood. And even had a 15-person fire crew show up to help out.
Yeah.
Crews used pitchforks to pile the invaders into garbage trucks, which crushed and compacted them.
Yeah. So if you go to Wikipedia and type in, you know, tumbleweed, you know, they'll give you a full explanation. They've even got a picture of what tumbleweeds look like when they're still growing. Because, again, like I said, they're actual plants. And they got a picture of a bunch of them growing in the Mojave. So,
yeah, so I guess this particular neighborhood has had this sort of trouble before because they have open desert to the south and east of this area.
Yep.
Thinking maybe put up a tree line?
Fencing. Some good sort of sturdy fencing would help out a lot.
Yes.
Sort of like how you have like noise protection for fences around highways and busy streets.
Yep. Anyway, moving on. Way over in the country is Singapore, which is basically like Disneyland, except they'll cane you if you put your cigarette butts on the street.
Yeah.
The scientists over in Singapore have actually built a robot that can actually, dear God, I can't believe this is true. They can build IKEA furniture in about 20 minutes.
So, that's a lot faster than most people can. So
yeah.
So that basically means that human race was doomed to extinction today.
Or at least anybody buying IKEA furniture.
Yeah.
Now you just need to buy one of these robots.
Actually, not even. I see the possibility for this in IKEA stores. Just buy the thing, have it put together, and you take the computer.
Yeah, just install a few of these in every IKEA store, and yeah, that's just cut out.
Not that bad of an idea.
I like the title of this article, which is Analysis: Robots Have Achieved What Humans Never Will, Assembling an IKEA Chair in Less Than 21 Minutes. Yeah, so these robots are using artificial intelligence. It's an autonomous robot designed by mechanical engineers in Singapore that is able to assemble an IKEA chair from scratch without a manual in less than 21 minutes.
Mm.
Such a feat has been described as the, quote, equivalent of the moon landing for robotics, because the skills required are straightforward but immensely complex. What they did, other engineers had built IKEA bots in the past, but those machines require custom-made mechanical hands to twist furniture parts into place. But Francisco Suarez Ruiz, Jian Zhou, Quang Kong Pham, three engineers at the Nanyang Technological University in Singapore, wonder if the task could be accomplished with off-the-shelf hardware and software available on open access libraries on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, so they acquired a couple of industrial robot arms with gripper claws, camera 3D vision, and force sensors to build this. Assemble a Stefan chair from the local IKEA store.
Yep.
The robot accomplished its mission in three stages: mapping, motion planning, and execution. Mm-hmm. First, the 3D camera snapped photos of the workspace, then an algorithm scanned through a library of 3D objects to identify the individual parts of the chair. Next, the AI system considered its plan of attack, figuring out how to efficiently move the robot arms without breaking the pieces. Finally, the robot arms got to work.
That's actually a pretty remarkable feat of software there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Especially being a lot of open source stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honestly, all you need is a robot with like four arms. You just need one with a hammer, one with a hex wrench, and two to hold shit in place. And you've pretty much, yeah, it's pretty much.
Or just solved it right there.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. Well. All right. Moving on. All the way over to South Korea. Samsung. They're actually releasing a smartphone. Because apparently they're just masochistic enough that they won't. They've actually released a smartphone without internet capabilities in South Korea.
Yep. This is basically for students.
No.
Let's see. They talk about the National College Entrance Exam that high school seniors take every year called the Sunyoung. That will essentially determines the rest of their lives. It's like the SATs if the SATs mattered. Here, where they're just like a small part of your college entrance stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's such a big deal, these tests that students have to study for, that they need some help in the form of phone that can't actually do much. So this is called the Galaxy J2 Pro. It has all the bare essentials of a smartphone. You can text, you can make calls with it, you can take photos with the 8-megapixel rear camera, 5-megapixel front camera. There's an offline Diodic 4 English dictionary app, a calendar app, calculator, and FM radio. That's it.
Alright.
There's technically an LTE modem in there for calls and texting, but it's disabled for everything else. Otherwise, there's no Wi-Fi or data to speak of. If you want, you can even opt for a data plan that limits how many texts you can send. So if you really want to go old school.
Yeah.
Comes in two colors, black and gold. Costs around 200,000 won, or about $190. The specs are pretty good, actually. 5-inch QHD AMOLED display, 1.4 gigahertz quad-core processor, 1.5 gigabits RAM, 2600 milliamps battery, and a micro SD slot. But it's generally intended for a temporary role in students' lives. Because they are currently running a promotion for students taking the 2019 and 2020 exams. Once they have completed the grueling test, they can actually trade it in for a Galaxy S, Note, or an A-series phone released after 2018 and have the cost of the J2 Pro reimbursed.
Yeah, well, I mean, this kind of makes sense to me.
Yep.
It's not anything that's ever going to come stateside. You can bet that much.
Yeah, they say there are no plans to sell the phone outside of South Korea yet.
Yep.
But there's probably no other country where this is really needed.
Yeah.
But it would actually probably make a good thing as like your first phone to give your kids.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to worry about them getting shitty apps that last for them to spend tons of money.
Yeah.
That sort of stuff. And a little less of the worrisome parts of the smartphone experience for kids.
Yeah. No Facebook, no Instagram, no Twitter.
No way to really talk to people that they shouldn't.
Yeah.
Unless they just randomly get texts from them or calls from them.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. So next up, apparently Best Buy is still around.
Yeah, I've heard
this. I was there today.
Yeah.
You know, I thought back in like 2010 that Best Buy was seriously going to go under.
Yeah, they made some smart moves to future-proof themselves a bit.
Yeah, so they're still very much around. They survived the death of CDs, for one thing. Do you ever go to the CD section at Best Buy now?
I haven't looked in probably a year or two.
Yeah, they don't even bother to sort them anymore. Yeah, they're just all over the place. But anyway, they've actually teamed up with Amazon. They've got a partnership going. It's going to allow them to start selling televisions at Best Buy with Fire TV built into it.
That's their smart TV operating system.
Yeah.
This is kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So They're going to have 11 TV sets powered by this operating system. Let's see. They're Fire TV Edition TVs. You know, good name. let's see. They are made by Toshiba, as well as Best Buy's own house brand Insignia. They will also be sold on their website, and will for the first time in its history become an official Amazon seller and offer those same teas through Amazon.com. Yeah, the clear emphasis for this whole thing is for Best Buy's stores, where Amazon will get its foot into the door in that way, beyond just their individual devices being sold there.
Yeah.
Yes. Fire TV Edition TVs offer essentially the same user interface and apps as Amazon's existing Fire TV devices, with the addition of a few specific features. Includes a live TV guide, program information for over-the-air broadcast channels, as well as picture-in-picture like previews of any connected devices, like Blu-ray players or a game console.
I buy one of these. I'm actually a fan of the Fire TV. I use it pretty regularly.
Yeah. Seems like it's probably better than whatever smart TVs have now.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I commonly hear about smart TVs is they're all shit.
Yeah.
Like, unless you get one of the ones with the Roku. Slow, whatever. Yeah. It's like you have to go to external devices to make them tolerable.
Yeah.
The other models are going to ship this year include 4K and HD TVs. Let's see. They'll start selling them this summer and have some more details as that nears.
Yep.
All righty. Wow. All right. Now moving on. Let's see. On Amazon. So some scientists in, let's see, where was it?
I think it's just here.
Yeah. It was just a group of scientists, international scientists, I guess. I don't say where this is. Okay, it says here it's at the University of Portsmouth in the UK. Okay. Anyway, they were working on some enzymes, and they accidentally created a mutant enzyme. And you know what this enzyme does? It eats plastic.
So they accidentally solved the garbage island problem.
Well, this relates to actually a story we talked about a couple years ago where we found a bacterium that naturally evolved to eat plastic.
Yeah.
And they created an enzyme based off of what they learned from this thing. And at some point tried to tweak it to see how it had evolved. But the test showed that they had inadvertently made the molecule even better at breaking down the PET plastic used for soft drink bottles. What actually turned out was we improved the enzyme, which was a bit of a shock. It's a great real finding.
Yeah,
and so
it's amazing. Actually, they you dump a few. I have a feeling they dump a few of these off of the onto the garbage island out in the middle of the, what was it, the Atlantic?
The Pacific.
Pacific. And it would probably be gone in like 6 months.
Yeah,
so the mutant enzyme currently takes a few days to start breaking down the plastic.
Yeah.
Far faster than the centuries it takes in the oceans. And researchers are optimistic they can even speed that up with further work.
They just
become a viable large-scale process.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah, these folks just fucking solved the plastic pollution crisis.
Yeah.
Like, just like that.
Yeah. Still got some ways to go, but...
So these bottles that are recycled can only be turned into opaque fibers for clothing or carpets. That's what the current sort of way it breaks down. The new enzyme indicates a way to recycle clear plastic bottles back into clear plastic bottles. Which could slash the need to produce new plastic.
Yep. So.
Well, that's just neat. Yeah. I think we have to tell these stories because it can get really easy to get bogged down in all the sort of environmental destruction that you find out about, you know, involving like climate change and, you know, and super volcanoes and all that shit. And people always forget those are all only the worst case scenarios, and only if we do nothing to actually prevent it.
Yeah.
Like, for example, they've basically, you know how for a long time people were terrified of the Old Faithful in Yellowstone, which is actually a super volcano, of that actually erupting again?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they actually have found a way to solve that. They got a contraption that they can put under it that will basically put, oh, well, I said under it, but over it. I got a contraption they've made that put over it that if it does erupt, all that massive pressure that will erupt from it will just convert it into water vapor.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. So, and now final story for our science part of the show. NASA actually launched a new satellite this week, and basically, it's another one of those satellites that's going to go out and start searching for exoplanets.
Yep. It was originally scheduled to launch on Monday, but they decided to delay that an extra couple days to do some more checks. This satellite is called the Transiting Exoplanet Survey Satellite, aka TESS. Mm-hmm. It launched on a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket, and within an hour, the solar rays that power the spacecraft were deployed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first of a new generation of exoplanet hunter satellites that will home in on temperate worlds close to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
It's the brainchild of researchers at the MIT in Cambridge. $337 million project aims to identify at least 50 rocky exoplanets or size or bigger, close enough for their atmospheres to be scrutinized by the much larger James Webb Space Telescope, which will launch in 2020, or ground-based telescopes now under construction. And so this is sort of the first step to help narrow our searches in the future. But yeah, it'll be a couple months before this satellite really starts working. Over the next several weeks, TESS will use boosters to elongate its orbit until it reaches as far as the moon. It will then use the moon's gravity to boost it into a particular 13.7-day orbit ever before used by the satellite, which swings between 400,000 and 100,000 kilometers above Earth. To save on power, TESS will take advantage of each close approach to Earth by turning its antenna towards home to transmit data as collected in a 3-hour download.
Yeah.
And the orbit is synchronized with that of the moon. For every lunar orbit, TESS does 2.
Mm-hmm.
This helps by using the moon's gravity to stabilize TESS's orbit, so it can stay on this trajectory for decades with little need for adjustment by thrusters.
Mm-hmm.
And then after 60 days of checks, TESS will begin scanning the skies for exoplanets.
Hmm. Nice. Mm-hmm. Find stuff eventually.
Yeah.
Yeah. Putting out
it's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
you know, of course, some people believe that the aliens are already here.
Yeah, and we elected one for president.
No. That's a thing.
Anyways. Don't blame me. I voted for Kodos.
Yeah. But anyway, now we got the entertainment portion of the show. And the first thing is Huey Lewis and the News. They have canceled all of their 2018 performances. That's all the performances this year because apparently old Huey is suffering some hearing loss.
Yeah, I didn't even know they were still performing.
Yeah, this is just sad to hear. He posted on his Twitter account 2.5 months ago, just before a show in Dallas, I lost most of my hearing. Though I can still hear a little one-on-one and on the phone, I can't hear music well enough to sing. Mm. The lower frequencies distort violently, making it impossible to find pitch. I've been to the House Ear Institute, the Stanford Ear Institute, and the Mayo Clinic, hoping to find an answer. The doctors believe I have Meniere's disease, and have agreed that I can't perform until I improve. Therefore, the only prudent thing to do is to cancel all future shows. Needless to say, I feel horrible about this and wish to sincerely apologize to all the fans who've already bought tickets and were planning to come see us. I want to concentrate on getting better and hope that one day soon I'll be able to perform again.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope there is treatment for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't realize Huey's been in the music world for at least since the 70s. So.
Yeah. And I guess this particular disease is a disorder of the inner ear, which causes episodes of vertigo and fluctuating hearing loss. Both Ryan Adams and Kristen Chenoweth were diagnosed with this in the past and have recovered. So there's definitely hope for Huey.
Yeah.
But, so Huey Lewis in the news. I'll be honest, you know, I like some of their songs, but honestly, a lot of their music comes off as rather cheesy to me.
I think that's kind of the appeal.
Yeah,
they're kind of, they were really big, like in the early to mid '80s.
Yeah,
like
around
right around 1984 when the album Sports came out. That was like Sports was like the biggest selling album of that year. Yeah. Their whole appeal is kind of like they're sort of like a. Kind of like a bar rock type thing.
Yeah.
And it's very smooth, very kind of simple. Yeah. Don't get me wrong. They are, from what I've been told, one of the most amazing live bands you'll ever see.
Yeah.
They did put out a really good album right around 1989 called, see if I can remember what it's called. It was kind of a more experimental type of album that they put out. Let's see. Small World, that's what it was called. It was a bit more experimental. It used a bit more jazz and blues influence, and especially the Tower of Power horn section were much more involved in the production. Yeah. But it didn't sell as well as the previous albums did. But then again, I mean, they had Sports and Four.
Yeah.
You know, those, both of which were huge, just insanely huge selling albums back when they were released. So kind of kind of hard to follow that up.
Yeah.
Because like Sports, it's like 7 times platinum by the RIAA. It was a number one album in 1984, spawned four top 10 hit singles, a fifth song that went top 20. So that's literally over half the album.
Yeah. I think it did pretty well.
Yeah. And also here's another thing. It was a self-produced album as well.
Yep. It says here they had 19 top 10 singles across the Billboard Hot 100, Adult Contemporary, and Mainstream Rock charts.
Yep. Do You Believe in Love? Hope You Love Me Like You Say You Do? Working for a Living, Heart and Soul, I Want a New Drug, Art of Rock and Roll, If This Is It. If This Is It, Please Let Me Know. Power of Love, which... By the way, The Power of Love, Ray Parker Jr. kind of stole that song to do the Ghostbusters thing.
Yeah, kind of.
People are like, what do you mean? He's like, listen to the two songs back to back. Basically, all he did is he took The Power of Love and basically sped up the keyboard riff.
Yeah.
And it's basically the exact same song. Yeah, so, all right, so next up, we got some Netflix news. Netflix has announced a new show called Maniac, and it's going to be featuring, amongst others, Emma Stone and Jonah Hill.
Yep, this is a remake of a 2014 Norwegian series of the same name, which is a dark comedy written by novelist Patrick Somerville and directed by Cary Fukunaga, who did True Detective Season 1. His first directing work since his Netflix original film Beast of No Nation. It'll be a 10-episode series. Also stars Justin Theroux and Sally Field. It features Hill and Stone as two strangers who find themselves in a pharmaceutical trial gone wrong. And that's about all we know.
Yeah.
Netflix released a few shots of the show.
Yeah.
And it looks pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll be out sometime this year, but no details yet.
Yeah. Cool. How about you hurry up and tell us when the fifth season of BoJack is supposed to come out?
Yeah, it'll be out soon. All right.
They keep saying that it's coming out this year.
Yeah.
And we're almost halfway through the year here, people.
Yeah.
But, all right, whatever. So, the DC...
These next two we could kind of take as one, because it's...
Yeah, basically.
They both have a theme to them.
Yeah, the DC Cinematic Universe, pretty much other than Wonder Woman, it's been kind of sucking.
Mm-hmm.
Man of Steel was just okay. Batman v Superman was garbage. That Justice League movie was just...
dumb.
It was a mess.
Yeah.
Wonder Woman, however, actually managed to succeed because they actually got a really talented director to work on it. Yeah. Well, we now know that they're going to be making a Black Hawk movie and a Birds of Prey movie. And the two people that they've gotten to direct it, Steven Spielberg is going to be directing the Black Hawk movie, and Kathy Yan will be directing the Birds of Prey movie.
Yeah.
Yep, so... do you know anything about Black Hawk?
Yeah, he was for the long time like the one black guy on the Justice League.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it seems to they want this to be sort of an action adventure movie.
Mm-hmm.
Which Steven Spielberg is pretty good at those.
Yeah.
The screenplay is being written by David Cope, who worked with him as screenwriter on, let's see if you know these movies, Jurassic Park, Lost World, Jurassic Park, War of the Worlds, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. One of these.
I've never heard of any of these.
These are good.
Yeah, so you have some pretty good talent there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're going to produce the film with Christy McCosco-Krieger under the Amblin Entertainment banner.
Yep.
Sue Kroll will executive produce under her Kroll and Company Entertainment shingle. So yeah, some good talent, and like one of their first big names attached to one of these properties.
We'll see if putting top talent behind the property actually lends to a good movie. So
yeah.
As for the Birds of Prey movie, Kathy Yan made her feature debut with the Sundance entry movie called Dead Pigs.
Yep.
I don't think it's anything like what you might think that name means.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Seems like it's a Chinese movie.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Is it for like a Hong Kong movie or?
Something like that. I was clicking on the link for the Dead Pigs. They reviewed it from Sundance earlier this year. Let's see. Kathy Ann's delightful, spiky comic debut about overlapping lives and interlocking misfortunes in modern China.
Ah, gotcha.
So it seems like
a slice
nice
of
person.
Life,
yeah.
Mm.
For a movie that is going to star Harley Quinn. And she's attached to star in this. But yeah, it's sort of the thing they should be doing, which is for female superhero movies, they should be getting female talent.
Yeah.
To direct it and write it.
Well, I mean, if the way they say it is, I mean, it worked with Wonder Woman, so...
Yep. She will be the first Asian woman to helm a movie from the DC Comics universe, which isn't really a huge sample size.
No. Yeah, that's kind of like... there's only been four movies.
Yeah, she'll be the second woman to helm a movie.
Yeah.
So being not white makes her the first Asian woman to do it, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they've also got Vernay tapped to direct New Gods.
Hmm.
So there's your...
Oh, that's going to be good.
Yeah. Who's penning this is Christina Hodson. She's also working on Batgirl.
Alright.
She wrote busy. The script here. Yeah, they're also just weighing their options for what to do with Harley Quinn. So they're looking at like a Suicide Squad sequel. They were thinking about doing before they settle on Birds of Prey is their next one. Yeah, production is expected to start at the end of the year after Robbie finishes shooting the new Quentin Tarantino movie.
Well, I do believe we got a show, folks. I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and for Filippo Nafo and Chris Lodge, I'd say good night.